Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
HQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
No, no, it's okay. It's really okay. Good evening, and welcome everyone to Madam Perry's Salon. I'm Madam Perry, your host, cruise director, also known as Jennifer Perry or Jennifer Maudette Perry, and I am delighted to be here and glad that you're here, too. If this is your first time and you're listening live on Blog Talk Radio on the evening of Wednesday, November 2nd, please click the follow button so that way you'll know what's going on. I've had a lot of people very unhappy when they didn't know certain guests were going to be on the show. And even though every episode is available afterward for free download on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, Blueberry, still some people want to know when a guest is on live, so that they can call, listen live, call in, talk to them, ask them questions, just like tonight. And last night's show was Glenn Berger. Thanks, everyone, for being on and listening and calling in. And that show had racked up almost 1,200 downloads in the first 3 hours after we did it. So Glenn Berger and his book, Never Say No to a Rock Star. That was fun. And believe me, tonight is going to be even better. You may have tried to listen in a few weeks ago when I had Jennifer Irwin on, and I had some technical difficulties. Thank you all for your patience, because I've got the lady back again. So I want to welcome the author of Address the Color of the Sky, Jennifer Irwin. Jennifer, welcome to Madam Perry's Salon.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This is a great honor, and I'm glad we got all the technical things rolling along so we can get on with the show.
So am I, and thank you so much. And you know what, people, some people have like a love-hate thing with social media, and or people tell me I'm Twitter queen and they don't get it. But it was through Twitter that I met you, and I've met so many people.
Yeah, I know. I love Twitter. I feel very grateful for Twitter, honestly.
I do too. And you know, and like I also met Kristen Johnson from Third Rock from the Sun. She's my buddy on there. We chat. She's hilarious. Just and I even had a client. You know, I'm an entertainment publicist. I even had a client once. I booked on a TV show somewhere and in Birmingham. And so I got on Twitter and I said, hey, my client's going to be on a TV show, a morning show. Can anybody help me get him a gig and something so we can announce it on the air and maybe bring you some business? And within a couple of hours, I had a venue. I had somebody donating wine, a wine importer. I had restaurants
so
with
awesome.
Food. I had a media guy said, yeah, I've got a magazine. I'll put it out. Yeah, so you can. It just depends on how you work it. You know, as long as you show some care and love for the other people on there, they'll show it for you too. So
that's true.
Yeah, so I'm glad I can get you now on the show while I still can before you're way up into the Hollywood machine and won't take my calls anymore.
That's never gonna happen, I promise. Now I will never. I'm gonna stay the same. I promise. I'm not gonna
okay.
be. No.
All right, that's a Jennifer promise. All right. Okay, so. I am so excited about your book, and it sounds fantastic. It's got a gorgeous, gorgeous cover, too. The book is called Address the Color of the Sky, and it's the main character, Prudence Aldrich, and she's just the girl next door, wife, mother, friend, but a woman with a secret. And what is her secret?
Okay, well, her secret is that she is a sex addict. And the whole, basically the premise of the book is how your past can actually affect the decisions you make, the men you choose to have relationships with, how you feel about yourself. And Prudence had a sort of a black hole inside of her, and she tried shopping and she tried, you know, bearing the pain as much as she possibly could from things that had happened to her. And it sort of exploded into her just getting promiscuous and losing sight of her moral compass. And she finally decided to check herself into rehab. And when she checks in, she thinks, you know, she wants her husband back. She's trying to make marriage work. And she's devastated that Nick, her husband, has left her. And in the end, she's not so sure that's what she wants. So she works very hard to get what she thinks she wants, and then in the end, it's not really what she wants. So she's able to see a clearer light and what makes her really happy. So
tell me now, tell us a little bit about Nick. You said Nick has left her. And
Nick is sort of a magnetic guy. He's quiet. He's very sexy, very good looking. And Prudence is very caught up in looks, and she's caught up in fashion, and she's an interior designer. So she's very visual, and she meets him, and they sort of just jump right into a relationship. And her mother has just passed away right before she meets Nick. So she's in a little bit of a broken state, and she's also just recently been dumped by another guy. So she's not in the best frame of mind. And so the two of them have a very sexual relationship, but it's not a very spiritual relationship. And it starts to crumble. The foundation of the relationship just is not there. And Nick has a drinking problem, which starts to show, and the cracks in the relationship. And Prudence doesn't have a lot of strength because she has had buried the pain of this traumatic childhood that she's had. And the book is back and forth in time every other chapter. So you see her, you know, the book opens, she's having sex in the airplane bathroom. And you're like, who is this girl, you know? The complete stranger. And she's sort of matter-of-fact about it. She's very, you know, cold about it. And as you see what happened to her, you really begin to care about her. And it's a very poignant story. And honestly, recently Kelly Oxford, I don't know if you have followed, she shared her sexual assault story on Twitter.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I believe 10 million women responded in a week. She was getting a tweet a second.
Yes.
And women were opening Twitter accounts just to share their story. And, I mean, this just made me realize how important my book is, how many women have experienced things that are not pleasant. And the whole point of the book is you can't let this ruin your life. You can't let something in your past just decide everything in the future. So, is that the phone ringing?
Yeah. Do people not know what's going on here? You know. So.
Yeah.
Not so much going to say. So, I hung up on it because I did. But go ahead.
And since Prudence actually has, there's a guy in rehab who is equally as broken, and they have it's sort of a deep story, a similar story, a relatable childhood story, and they're in the same group together. So there's the whole cast of characters in rehab, which is really wonderful because you get to see the different addicts and you get to see what you know, their life stories. And she kisses him in rehab, and so, which is a big violation, you know. Yeah, and then she also feels sort of like an anomaly because there's no other women in there that have this blaring sticker that says females only, and she's not supposed to talk to men the whole time she's in rehab. So, and finally this woman checks in to the sex addict, the female sex addict. And it's like, it makes Prue just feel like she's not a freak, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, and yesterday, speaking of Twitter, a woman sent me a private message that she is a recovered sex addict. And she said she can't wait to read my book, that, you know, it made her feel really good to know that there's a story out there. So, you know, it made me feel really happy.
Now, that's interesting, because it brings in some other questions like, okay, first of all, you say, you know, to kiss this guy, you know, it's a definite no-no. So I guess there, it's the same thing as, you know, bringing weed into drug rehab or something, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's sort of weird because Prudence's addiction is everywhere. There's men everywhere. And that's really a different experience than someone who's going in there for a drug addiction. Yeah. Her addiction is men. And a lot of her addiction is not really, once she's actually having sex, she's over it. It's really the buildup and getting the men and the male attention. And all of this is really based on her having an abusive childhood and hating herself and feeling unworthy of love. And I think a lot of women can relate to, you know, maybe getting a little wild in their lives here and there. I mean, women tend to do it right after they get divorced or a breakup. And I think what happened to Prudence is she actually gets raped a couple of times. And one of the things I learned from researching in the book is that the chances that once you've had a rape, you're actually, the chances of happening again, double, triple. I mean, it just goes exponentially higher because you're a victim. And so she basically was a victim, and she saw herself as a victim. And I think she had to peel that off her. She had to just get rid of the American Tourister luggage and try and lead a life of someone who had self-love. And the inner voices that we all talk to ourselves, listening to that inner voice, not allowing us to be mean to ourselves, you know. There's just a lot of lessons in the book. I got to know women when I was teaching private Pilates. I got to really, like, understand women. And it really helped me with the book a lot.
Interesting. And also, and by the way, if you're listening to us live, we're going to be opening up the phones in just a couple of minutes for you to talk with Jennifer Irwin and ask her question. I think we've got, I know at least two people on the line right now that we'll be bringing in. But the number is 646-716-9922, 646-716-9922 to call in. That's toll free in the continental U.S. You can talk with author Jennifer Irwin because she's got a lot of good stuff here. She's got a book like no other. And I'll say that because, you know, Jennifer, I think we talked a few weeks ago about how I get books from publicists and so forth for people that want to be on the show, or also because I'm a book publicist, people send me stuff. And sometimes you see something, you go, oh, okay, well, that's different. And then you get five more books just like it, you know, or at least I will.
But you made me feel so good when you told me that.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. You were like, I saw your book, and I was like, this is different. And I, thank you for doing that. I mean, saying that.
Yeah.
It made me feel so good.
I've had five books sent to me that were like, gone, girl. You know, you're thinking, okay, how many more can you? And, yeah, listen, I was glad, too. And I was thinking, too, when you said that somebody contacted you on Twitter, who was, you know, who was a woman who said she was a sexual addict, that there are still people, as much as we try, and as many people nowadays that are, thank goodness, open-minded, open-hearted, ready to share and learn about each other and give respect to other people. Still, there are people whose situations or circumstances or lifestyles are marginalized still, or still they're you know, still afraid to tell people. It would still be, you know, what would they think? What would people think if they knew this about me? And just knowing that somebody contacted you to say, okay,
it
gets me.
It was, you know, I'm very touched, first of all, when people share something so personal with me, that because it's difficult. It's a very shameful addiction, first of all. I mean, men can be a sex addict. There's a lot of men that are out there that are sex, but you don't hear about women that much. It's really brushed under the rug. And I was actually just talking to a girl who's been in rehab three times for an opiate addiction. And I said, well, were there any sex addicts, female sex addicts? And she said there was one in every single rehab she went to, and one in the sober living house. So, I mean, they're out there. And I think there's more than we know. I really do.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Because, remember, there was a time when, you know, anyone who was gay or bi or transgender or all different kinds of things, you know, even now people are starting, of course, I was talking to a friend last week that even now people are starting to hide their political affiliations, but they don't know how people are going to react to them these days.
Right.
And,
yeah.
So whenever, well, two of the main things I want to get to are, of course, we're going to talk about Hollywood, how Hollywood's come calling to you already, but also, for someone like this writer, I mean, for this woman that contacted you, and I think that is just wonderful. It makes my heart happy that you made her feel included and happy and understood and enough to even contact you. But to do this, you had to have really gone into the vaults of this kind of stuff and do some serious research.
I did. And I actually... There's a sexual addiction specialist who runs a treatment center in Beverly Hills, and she is an amazing woman. She's obviously a therapist, and this is what she does. And then there's also an author, a doctor, a PhD, who has written pretty much every single book on sex addiction. And I read all his books, and he's actually now his assistant through Twitter they've asked me for an advanced copy of my book. So if I can get the sex addiction expert to say my book is legit, that would be really great for me.
Oh,
but yeah, I did a lot of research. And like I said, I've lost track of my own moral compass at times in my life, and it never, you know, I never. I'm happy about that if I, you know, the times I've done it. And I think a lot of women can relate to that. You know, and when you look back, it, you can see maybe where you were in your life, a place in your life where you weren't feeling that good about yourself. And you just needed a guy to, like, tell, you know, we sought validation through male attention. And that's really unhealthy. It really is. And so I really want this book to let women know that the voices that we have, the things we say to ourselves and maybe things, experiences from our past, they don't have to rule everything in our future and our present day. So, but Prudence Alder really has a tough life. I mean, she's, you know, she's really beaten down. So hopefully most people wouldn't have had as many bad experiences as she has, but, you know. You have to make it really bad for the character, and then if you know, and then make it even worse. You know, that's how you write a good question.
And make it even, yeah. And because you say, and since you shared this with me, I hope you wouldn't mind me repeating this too. That you know, you did attend AA meetings, SAA, NAA meetings, interviewed a lot of people, male and female sex addicts, and then you said too, you were a child of an alcoholic and a drug addict. So
yes,
you know it's a lot to cover. And I knew too. In fact, you know, we were supposed to all keep a secret in the family that my brother was in prison and he was a felon and a crackhead. And you know, you learn, you know, I'm like you. It's like, that's not me. That doesn't define me. And I got to tell you, actually, it's a guy when I was at the gym where I was doing CrossFit. He had this little remote control rat on Halloween, and he would run around the gym, scare people. And I was the only person that didn't jump up and scream. And he says, Timmy, he says, you know that's not. I said, I know what it is. I know what it is, Mike. He goes, no, you don't. I said, honey, look, if you've had a double, he goes, it didn't scare you. I said, baby. If you had a double barrel shotgun put up against the back of your head in your own home by your brother, that's not a whole lot that's going to scare you about a mechanical rat, okay? You got to go.
I know, right? Yeah, and I mean, a lot of people would look at you and never know that you have had these experiences. And the more people you talk to, you can see how addiction has affected so many families. So many families. So, Yeah, and I think that people are becoming more open about talking about it too, which is great.
Yeah, and I'm glad when people say, you know, there are so many people that I've met too, even on Facebook, that will share, like, these are my good days, my bad days, this is my, you know, third year sobriety. And I thought, they're coming here, hopefully they're feeling a warm, friendly, a welcoming kind of a love, like, okay, we're in cyberspace, but we're giving you cyber hugs and encouraging you and saying, well done.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm really love to encourage women. And I, you know, I'm really a big advocate of supporting women, uplifting women, and being happy when good things happen and feeling bad when bad things happen. And I think women can sometimes get competitive and whatnot, and I really think it's good to just support each other as much as we can.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I'll tell you what, I've already got, like I said, we have a couple of callers here waiting to talk to you. And the first one, and I think this might be a Tennessee area code, welcome to Madam Perry's Salon.
Hey, Jennifer, how are you?
How are you? Thank you for calling.
This is Becky Kyle.
Hi. So, you got a contract with Hollywood? How did that happen, Jennifer?
Throughout the process of, while I've been writing the book, I sought to get reviews and just see where it was, what people thought of it, how was it coming across, and because I do live in Los Angeles and I'm in the area of where there are people from that are in the film business, my book got into someone's hands who was in the industry, and it was a very early version of the book, although the foundation of the story is basically the same. It's just done the actual writing more, and she fell in love with it. And basically, it took a while for the whole – she approached me, I'd say maybe a year or six – within 6 to months to a year after she first read it and said, I want to purchase the film rights. And, of course, at first I thought she meant option the film rights. And I've never had an experience like this. I didn't know anything about it. And thankfully my boyfriend is an attorney, so he was able to see through. What does it mean? And so I said, do you mean option? Because optioning a book happens all the time. And it's a really kind of not the best situation for an author, because they give you a couple $100 or a couple $1,000 and they say, we own the film rights to this book for a while, and then if we don't want to make the film, you know, we'll own it for 2 years and then shelf it, you know, and then you can get the options back. So she said, no, I don't mean option. I mean, I want to. And she also asked me for any future books she wants to have the first right to every book that I write from here on out. Yeah. So, and it's really interesting because the executive producer and the director are both women, and the director that's now going to be working on the film is a younger. She's a sort of a different generation, and very talented, extremely talented woman. And so, and the story just, she loved it too. And it just really made me feel obviously very, very good. But more important to me is to hold the book in my hand, to see it, to walk through the airport and see it on a bookshelf. I mean, I'm dying to get it out to the world. So I just got an agent, so, and she's working on that for me, so.
Oh,
that's great. So your contact basically found a rough draft and liked that. That's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Not that
common, sir, but the Reese Witherspoon is actually purchasing film rights through her book club. She started purchasing film rights before books were published, because she gets her hands on books. You know, she can get her hands on things earlier. And one of the books that she purchased before it was published was Luckiest Girl Alive. And that sort of lays the foundation for other producers to get their hands on books before somebody else does. And what's really hot right now are strong, flawed female protagonists. And that is what my book has. And Reese Witherspoon really got sick of the roles that she was playing and, you know, really milquetoast-type female roles that are not really strong girls. And then she wanted to see something with some meat. She wanted to even play a girl who's not likable, you know. She and so this really helped me. And I indirectly, I'm always thanking Reese Witherspoon, and their book club has been very supportive to me, and I'm incredibly grateful to them. And, you know, she wants to see really meaty female characters, and that's what my book has. And so, yeah, I think the timing of my book was probably is good too, so that helps.
Definitely. The Hollywood, you got Reese Witherspoon, your boyfriend's a lawyer. You don't have to go track down my attorney, Bernie, to help me out. You've got it going on. And by the way, we have another caller. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Becky. I'm sorry. I've got another caller on the line. And he's been texting me while he was waiting to be introduced in here to Madame Perry Salon. By the way, Becky, you've been here before many times. You know this.
Mm-hmm.
I did explain to Jennifer ahead of time that it's like the inside of Jeannie's bottle in here. That's what Robert Taylor said. So I hope you found a nice cushion to sit on, Jennifer. In fact,
just watch out for what they've left under the cushions.
Okay, well, those are the suspense writers bringing their own suspense in here, and I've had it cleaned a couple times since then. But yeah, you're right. But anyway, so this guest, the guy that's been texting me, he's waiting on the line with us, is Mr. Vincent Levy Bryant. Vincent, welcome back to Madame Perry Salon.
Hi, Vincent Levy Bryant.
Levy Bryant.
Better known as V. Levy, five letters, V-L-E-E-V. You can Google it. And I am original music composer for film and a film producer. Nothing you heard of. I'm working on a dark musical that has a character that's very much like the woman that you're writing about in your book.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. That sounds great.
Yeah,
I love dark characters.
She's an anti-hero, and she's a young girl who was molested and has turned that into – she's turned into a sexual predator.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's a good example of how a traumatizing experience in your childhood can, you know, change the way you turn out as a person.
Absolutely. I think your topic in your book is fascinating, and it is long overdue.
Oh, well, thank you. I really appreciate that. And so it's going to be on Broadway? Are you trying to make it a play? Or
no, this is going to be a film. And
The
story is really about six young Americans who meet on social media who plan to meet up in Atlanta for a 72-hour rave, and it changes their lives forever. That's what it's about.
Wow. That sounds
kind of
awesome.
It's going to be very awesome. We have some very, very talented people. My screenwriters are young and talented. Ryan Thornton is a genius. He's at Ole Miss. He's in the writing program. I mean, you know, John Grisham went to Ole Miss and Morgan Freeman, and this young man is so talented. I was so lucky to be able to meet him through my manager, Tracy
Goldberg-Morris. I actually met John Grisham once. I mean, that was such a life-changing moment for me. I met him
of course.
A hotel lobby. I didn't even really know who he was until I realized who he was. Yeah.
Well, I heard he's a nice guy.
He was amazing. He was such a great guy. I mean, you know.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Pardon me. Let me interrupt to say this. When Vincent said just a moment ago, Jennifer, that, you know, he said he's a musician, composer, but you wouldn't know anything he's done. But last night he called in, my guest, as I said, was Glenn Berger, who wrote Never Say No to a Rock Star about his years working for Phil Ramone as a producer and a schlepper and a hay boy at A&R Studios, working with Dylan and Jagger, Paul Simon, Bette Midler, and all these, Sinatra, Bob Fosse. And when Vincent called in, Vincent worked at A&R after him, so they had a lot of, you know, stories to tell. But Vincent told a story about being woke up and pulled out of bed at 4 a.m. from a call that he had to go rush to back to a studio because he was his services were requested by Mick Jagger.
It wasn't the recording session, it was the rehearsal sessions for Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, you've been down the block, okay?
Yeah,
so,
and you did it, and you
so
did it
awesome.
Again. I don't know how you do this, Jennifer. You did it again.
My best friend Kenya says I'm a people connector. So
this character and the character, one of the six characters I have is this woman. I just sat and listened.
Now,
it was awesome.
Hey, I got it like that. Did you write down, make sure you write down the name of the book is Address the Color of the Sky. If you've seen the pictures,
yeah,
I've been putting them all over. It's a gorgeous cover.
I see that.
Okay, so write that down and don't forget so you can get it. And also, thanks. Becky Kyle has left us, but Becky, thanks, because she's already been promoting this and sharing this event. And the book cover all over Facebook. I've been seeing her do that the last hour or so. Thank you, Becky. And you can drop back in anytime. So, and also, if anyone has a question or wants to talk with Jennifer Irwin, just call 646-716-9922.
I have one question.
All right.
I just have one question.
Okay.
In this type of, you know, I mean, I don't tend to genderize things. I think women and men go through the same things. They may react differently, but it's still the same situation. In the case of my character, she's young, and the way the film opens, I mean, I don't want to give away my film too much, but she opens, she's in a dentist's office, and her thing is she always notices when a man is looking at her in that way, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And she kind
mm-hmm.
of further set the trap. Well, she's set up to go to the dentist to have this molar looked at, and he decides that he wants to put her under anesthesia, and he does, and he, you know, undoes her blouse and, you know, does what he does, and I don't want to give it all away, and she notices that when she comes to and the receptionist is there or the nurse assistant is there and he's gone. So then she later finds out where he is and meets him at the coffee shop or, you know, she runs into him at the coffee shop and she sets up a little rendezvous with him and she ends up doing things. She always does things to kind of right the situation using the sex, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm like wondering
well,
if
I
a
think
lot
that,
of
yeah that sounds like you know a lot of women want to do that. They want to write the situation through that.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I was getting at. How right on the track these writers I have are brilliant. They're brilliant. They're awesome.
Yeah, I think I don't know if necessarily women know they're doing it. I think women know when a man is looking at them. I think it's you know mm-hmm. it's an instinct thing that where you just know, but
I mean in
I,
that way
I,
though, in that way,
yeah,
like they're
in
looking
that way.
At them
yeah,
with that intention.
Know. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. She knows, and she intentionally
sets part,
it up. Right, right. Very good. That's good. These guys are awesome. It's awesome to hear this and talk to you. I just sat and listened. You know, that's awesome.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing your film be a huge success.
Thank you very much. I'll stay in touch and I'll let everybody know. Jennifer will know what's going on. Jennifer's
great.
Yes, the madam will know what's going on. Hey,
Network Jennifer.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Once again, wow. I got to talk to you later,
thank
Jennifer.
Thank you. Nice talking to you. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. All righty. Good night, ladies.
Bye. Thanks, Vincent. And again, you can call 646-716-9922 and talk with Jennifer Irwin. She's amazing. She's a fascinating woman, very brilliant, very talented, and yet she's very friendly and approachable. You can ask her questions, talk to her about things. I'd like to get into some of the background, though, back to Address the Color of the Sky, your novel, and the main character, Prudence Aldrich. Did you intentionally come up with the name, create the name Prudence Aldrich Did I have kind of a period?
Yeah, you know, it was really interesting because I struggle. Naming characters has actually been a very, very challenging thing for me. And I actually just changed the name of Prudence's husband because I wasn't happy with it. And you know, you name somebody a child, you even go, oh, I know someone that's named that, and I don't like them, or I do like them, and what this name represents, you know. And I have a friend who's an author. He's been a great mentor to me, and we were talking one day, and we started just hashing out names. And it's the oxymoron, of course, because Prudence is, you know, you think Prudence, whatever. But Prudence is from an old family. She has this aristocratic lineage, and I wanted to find a name that represented that, yet was almost hip. It's so old-fashioned, you know. And I knew a girl in boarding school named Prudence, and she was this really cool girl, and I thought, that's you know, it's a new name. It's an old name that's new again. So who knows? Maybe I'm setting a trend, and you'll see that name out there now. I would love it. It would really crack me up. And you know, the producer absolutely loves the name. And I had won a publishing contest a while back, and their editor said, "Well, the first thing you have to do is change the name of that main character. It's terrible." And the minute I sold the film rights, the producer was like, "Don't change the name. I'm buying the rights to Dear Prudence, the song." And she loves the name. And most people love the name. So, and I personally love the name. I tell somebody, if somebody at Doubleday tells me to change the name, I might have to do it. But right now it's staying where it is. And I do love her name. So, yeah.
I do. Well, it's good. And Aldrich, I think it's John Aldrich. And it's a beautiful name. So you say she's got an aristocratic upbringing, but it kind of goes back and forth, I understand.
Mm-hmm. It does. It goes back and forth in time. And one of the things I do, obviously, is try to read my genre of book, especially New York Times bestsellers. And I did read Luckiest Girl Alive because I was interested in why Reese Witherspoon was so interested in buying the rights to it. That book actually goes back and forth in time, exactly like my book. So I was thrilled to see that. And you see that in films like Pulp Fiction goes back and forth in time. It's easy to do in films. It's a great way to tell a story with flashbacks and foreshadowing and whatnot. It's difficult for a book. But the only way that I can create empathy for this character who does bad things and has had, you know, these experiences is to see what happened and how poignant her childhood story is, and relatable, how absolutely relatable it is. And then you start really caring about her. And Prudence has great friends, which was really fun for me. And it's not that her friends are enabling her to do bad things. They're really not that aware of what she was up to, but she has these amazing female friendships. And I think that's a sign of a good person when women have good friendships. So that's sort of a little seed that I show that she's, you know, been able to maintain these great women in her life. So
now she has, when she's young, she has a best friend named Lily.
Yeah, she has a best. Lily's just this awesome character. And I can't wait to see who they set up to play Lily in the film, because Lily's just, I wanted to create characters with qualities that I admire in women, you know, qualities that I find attractive. And Lily's a very strong woman, and she's not afraid to speak her mind. So Prudence grew up very poor and has sort of the less than mentality. She grew up poor in a very wealthy area, so it was hard, I think, the way for her life, the way it came out for her. You know, you can just see that it took a toll on her. And most of her friends in the book are very wealthy, but they're generous, so they don't make her feel bad that she didn't have any money. So, yeah.
Yeah, and then And we get the feeling it's going to be a whole lot of other backstories about Prudence's life that she doesn't even know about, that she's going to figure out from the people around her that have been so generous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a therapist,
Mike. Her group leader, Mike, brings out a lot of things and gets her to see why she turned out and makes these decisions and things that happened with her childhood, putting the puzzle pieces together in rehab.
And see, there's the comment where she's talking about, you know, someone helps her. She wants to ride horses. I guess that's the horse he set out there, the aristocratic people. And she's someone lets her use their daughter's pony or sets up the riding lessons.
Yeah, she has sort of a fairy godmother. The landlord is this very Jackie Kennedy type woman, and you find out that she has lost her daughter. Her daughter was dragged to her death in an elevator in New York City, and so she doesn't ever say this to Prudence. Prudence's mother tells her that the daughter has died, and there's this little scrappy pony that almost looks like a donkey. And so the landlord lets her ride this pony and lets her use the piano in their house, you know. And Prudence thinks about the girl was dragged to her death by a red coat. And so Prudence thinks about the girl with the red coat all the time, who, you know, she's curious of who this fancy girl, this daughter of this amazing woman who Prudence idolizes. And Prudence figures out that she gets a scholarship to boarding school, and that this woman, she didn't really get a scholarship. This woman's actually paid for her tuition. You know, I probably shouldn't reveal the story, but it's sort of like bad things happen to this girl, and then there's these little people all around her that are trying to make things right for her. You know what I mean? So it's kind of this sweet story in a way.
Because I think that there was a part in there during that time where you said in the synopsis that you sent, you said, and this gets your heart, it says, Prudence feels like a donkey in a world of thoroughbreds.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, and yeah. But you read that sentence, you have to stop. And then let your breath go, and then go,
It's been basically Prudence is this poor girl, and she doesn't get a lot of attention from her mother. She has a very brutal stepfather, and she's surrounded by all these fancy people, and is not fancy, and she feels. The landlord reads her the story of Donkey Skin, which is a fairy tale, and it is about this girl who's trying to escape having to marry her father. It's a real fairy tale, and that's how I came up with the title of the book. And so Prudence sees this donkey, and the landlord's on this beautiful thoroughbred, and she feels like a donkey. I mean, she just feels like a scrappy donkey, you know. Inside, he doesn't look like it on the outside, but it's how we feel on the inside that really, truly matters, you know. I think a lot of women can relate to that, because some days we all feel like donkeys, you know. I mean, at least I do.
I do think we all do, and the thing is, it's one of those things where we never really know how the other person is feeling, and the person that we think looks like they've got it all completely going on, and we might think they're a snob or something, we have no idea. And
we
I know often
we really
I do
don't.
That.
That's a message actually that is in my book, that you can really get that, you can see that's coming across. And you know, I'm sure you told your kids the same thing. And, you know, you never want to envy someone because you don't know what their story is. And that's why I'm trying to create this caring relationships between women, because, you know, we need to uplift each other. And life is hard, and we're all just trying to do the best we can. And I think it's good to really encourage other women and to be supportive.
Yeah, Jack, I'd give a shout out to my best friend Kenya Colbert, who she may call in later, but she is I've known her 17 years, And I always say we're the opposites. You know, she's the nice one. But she, I never really felt that way. I never felt that there were, you know, females were like a trust or friends. And Kenya's just all about sisterhood and love. And she's really, really brought it to me and made me feel at least her and
wonderful.
People that she knows. And, you know, everybody has a friend where you think, you know, if they don't like this person, I don't like them. Because there's this one friend that you know. To you, it's just beyond reproach, and that's her.
Yeah.
And she's really taught me a lot about female friendships and relationships. And
that's wonderful. That makes me happy to hear.
Yeah, she does.
I
now,
love that.
So I want to dig more into Prue, if you don't mind. So.
Yeah. No, I love talking about her.
Good, because the character is so complex. And... From the childhood on up, but in the part where you know she's separated from her husband and she's going to rehab, and then you said the synopsis said even though Prue doesn't smoke, she finds solace with the other addicts. That
oh, in the smoking area.
Yeah, and that she, you know, sex was a way to. Kind of, you know, salve some pain and drown out some bad memories.
Yeah. She, the smoking area. I mean, one thing about if you go to an AA meeting, you'll see a lot of people smoking outside. And you know, smoking's very passe. You know, I don't want to get sued by you know the cigarette companies. But it's you know, it's not healthy. It's not good for you. But the fact of the matter is people still do it, and in rehab, it is the last addiction. It is sort of their final rebel cry, and they do it because it makes them feel like they can just keep one bad habit, you know? And a lot of the soulful talk and conversations in the book happen in the smoking veranda. And one of the things is that the characters carry around babies, and they drag around giant vinyl blocks with chains attached, and the guy that Prudence kisses actually thinks that he can drink alcohol and not do cocaine, and his therapist and his group leader's like, well, that's not, you know, that's not the case. You have to quit drinking too. So they make him carry this giant block around. So you see how you get into their hearts and you get to know the characters. And one of Prudence's very close friends in rehab actually commits suicide in rehab. So there's, you know, there's a lot of ups and downs and hardships. And so it makes the book really very, a lot of moments where you just go, no, you know, my whole family, when I decided I was going to off this one character, my whole family was like, no, you're not going to have the stripper die. You know, I had a riot in my house. It was hilarious. So,
and yeah. How does that make you feel? I mean, you made it so real. Your family doesn't want him killed off. No. We love him.
I mean, you know, it was really I have all boys, and they've been really great. My kids have been supportive, so.
Oh, good. That's so good. Can I ask you too? Because I'm just fascinated by the creation, like as I said, of such complex characters in complex situations that you've created. And I'm sorry, I've got hold on a minute. I've got somebody here. I didn't even realize they were in the studio. I apologize. Let me welcome Jennifer Earle. Let me welcome my BFF, my queen diva friend, Kenya Colbert, to Madame Perry's
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Jennifer.
Great friend. This is the wonderful friend.
Right when she said, I might call in, I'm like, I'm here.
I'm sorry.
Oh, well, it's very nice to meet you.
Hey,
baby,
you are
well.
I was
enjoying listening.
Yeah. So sometimes people will send a message in through the messenger on Facebook, send a question in for the guest. And so I was searching through there until I see King just pop up. Hey, I'm here on hold. So, yeah, we were just talking.
Hello.
And
Yeah, I was texting you and you never came in. But when she was, when Jennifer was talking about the friends and how good it is to have good friends, and I was like, oh my gosh, she's so right. And you were just talking about your kids, and I was like, oh geez, Louise, I know I do the same thing. And sometimes we get kind of weird where our kids, but they know us, they know our hearts, so it's okay to say weird things to them sometimes.
Your kids are, yeah, that's the best. When you say things to your kids, and they're just like, Mom, no, what? You know? Yeah,
absolutely.
I like that.
The book sounds so interesting. I just cannot wait to read it. I just cannot wait.
Thank you so much. You have no idea how much it means to me to hear that. And, yeah, it's my heart and soul.
I'm laughing about
it. I know not everyone's going to love it, but I appreciate you saying that more than anything.
No, I'm sitting there laughing. You're like, no, the cigarettes. It's like everybody's outside smoking cigarettes, and I'm imagining that just laughing in my head. Like, I can see that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, and Prudence is like, everyone's like, well, why are you sitting here? You don't smoke. I mean, that's where you have to go if you're going to talk to people. And she doesn't want it to not be, you know. So she goes to the smoking area. And it's a very, it's the best place to really have those conversations where there's no therapist and they're not in a group meeting. And I love how I was able to build the smoking platform of just where the conversations happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's like the water cooler, a cup of coffee, cigarettes.
Yeah, it's that thing
that people do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Prudence really hates food, and they're not allowing her to work out while she's in rehab because she thinks she's fat, but she's really not. And so she doesn't want to go in the dining room that much because she feels like she's going to, you know, turn into, like, the spokesperson for IHOP while she's in rehab. So she's happy to not be in the dining room around all the cookies, and she's happy to be in the smoking area. So
I'm loving your humor. Wow.
Like I said, you know, Kenya really has taught me a lot about having friendships with women and trusting women
and
so forth.
As well.
It was.
You know, they say you have to be a good friend to you know, in order to have a good friend, you have to be a good friend. You really do.
That's the truth. That is the truth. Yeah,
that
is the absolute truth.
Well, then, while you're in the end,
you are very blessed to have each other.
We are.
We really are. And Jennifer, we say it every day, and we do to each other.
We really do.
That's really cute. You guys are so cute.
I know. Oh, you'll have to. Are you going to be at Book Expo next year? You better be, because we'll be there to see you.
I'm going to go for sure.
Oh, good.
Okay.
We'll look for you.
Get it on my calendar.
Oh,
hopefully
yeah.
I'll be by then, or at least know who's going to be publishing me. So.
Did I lose you guys? Hello?
No, you didn't lose us.
Hello?
Oh. Are you there? Okay, you haven't lost us, but so we'll send you a picture so you'll know to give you a little warning before you see us. This is one other thing I want to know is, as I was saying, since you got complex characters and a complex situation in so many facets of it, her life and all the different little intricacies of when you're in rehab with the, as you said, the smoking places where you can go if you don't smoke, because you want to talk without somebody, without a therapist around or in a group situation or whatever. So many complex situations in the characters. So tell me, I'm very interested, I know you touched on this before, but how did you taught Pilates to women. How did that help you understand more about women? And their friendships and their personalities and
one thing I really learned about is women, that no matter what kind of financial, what their money situation is, women are the same the way they want to share their lives with someone. They want that women learn and grow and feel intimacy with other women by sharing personal things about themselves. Hopefully when you share a personal thing about yourself, you're sharing it with someone that you can trust and they're not going to twist it around and, you know, ruin your life. But for the most part, women want to share. And I became really interested in sex drive and female sex drive and the difference between men and women. And women tend to really, it makes women feel more sexual when a guy helps them do the dishes and helps them around the house. And they're not feeling like a slave. They're not feeling like, you know, am I the only one doing this here? And it's like, a woman's love language for the most part is acts of service. And I think that men need to understand that, you know, is a very sexy thing for a woman when a guy, you know, wants them to, you know, relax a little bit, you know, let the woman sit down once in a while. But I became interested in why some women's sex drives go down. And I realized some of it is the relationships that they're in, or, you know, hormones are obviously play a problem, but, or a role in it. But I taught private Pilates to college students, high school students, all the way up to women who have their own jets and flying private and multiple homes. And women are all the same in the end of the day. And that was really interesting to me. And you become like a therapist to your clients. I mean, they have their feet in the straps and they're spreading their legs. I mean, you know, it's a very, Pilates is, you know, it's intimate, you know. And, you know, you get, you're touching people, you get close. And so, I did it for a long time. I'm in a house full of boys. I have all boys. And it was really great for me to get to know women and to really, you know, of course, I went to all girls boarding school. So that was really easy for me to write that chapter in the book because I lived that. And but I, you know, I am very interested in women and learning about their lives. And I'm curious. And and thankfully, I got to hear a lot of really interesting things from women, and it helped me build my characters. So,
that's one thing. That's one thing that you were talking about in the inspiration. You said all the different kinds of women: high school students, athletes, strippers, housewives, Playboy bunnies, freshly divorced, newly engaged. Everything. Some women fly private. Some have multiple homes. Some struggle to pay for lessons. And but then you said, what I found with this. Even the ones with simply seemingly perfect bodies and lives feel sad, insecure, and ugly. The same woman a week later could feel confident, hopeful, and beautiful, but complex, but universally seek intimacy with other women through stories of our lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beautiful. And that really was very an interesting, you know, thing for me to learn. I mean, because I went through a lot of some very hard times, when I got divorced, really, really hard times, and my kids did too. And it was a very good outlet for me to see how other women also have troubles, even though you might see on the outside they don't seem like they do. But, you know, we all have our troubles.
Yes.
So it helped me, you know, it helped me a lot. And I was nervous when I trained the Playboy bunny. I was like, you know, she was married to a very famous rock star for a while. And I mean, her body is ridiculous. And I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, she's not even going to take body for me. I don't even have that good of a body. I was like, and she was just as kooky and quirky as the rest of us. I mean, it was just really great she was normal. What is normal is really kind of the theme of my book, actually, you know, what is normal. But, you know, I mean, it was just fun for me to just see that all women are very similar. We're very similar.
Yeah. Jennifer, I tell you a funny story right quick? Well, both Jennifer's started something. Okay, so my friend Jennifer, one year for my birthday, she gave me a book, and it sits in my office, and every man that looks at this book is forever giving me the side eye because of my BFF, and it's a book, and it says Women's Porn, and it's a book, and it has this man, this sexy guy on the front. And each page has a man doing housework every day.
That's hilarious. That is hilarious. I love it.
You just validated what I said about
how it really helps a woman feel sexy when the dude's helping them out around the house. That's hilarious.
And there are gorgeous guys in this book and the pictures, and one of them offering a slice of pie. He said, "Would you like some pie? I think you're looking a little too thin."
That's classic. I love it.
That means there'll be a lot of parking places at the craft show. You want to go? You know, that kind of stuff.
Well, the craft show, that's funny. Yeah, I mean, that's
cute. Behind
all that, that is true.
And behind the jokes in the book, there's a little bit of truth there. I mean, look, you know,
exactly.
Let's be honest, you know. It's very interesting to see how women are. And I'm not teaching Pilates anymore because I'm writing full time. But it was a great career for me at the time, and I learned a lot. And everything you do in life, you figure out why you do it. And maybe I just taught Pilates to write this book and to help me develop characters. At any rate, it's really fun hearing you guys talk because it makes me feel like, oh, maybe I'm not too far off base here.
Not at all. I can tell this. Kenya knows my husband very well because he may not hear this, but I remember one time, this was many years ago in our marriage, and I had been frustrated with him for not helping with the housework, so he got to where he'd start doing stuff, and he was doing, I don't know, cleaning the kitchen, doing dishes, and I go, come here, baby. You know, I call him, okay, now look, you wanted me to wash the dishes, and now you want to have sex. Now, how am I going to finish this? Like,
I know, men cannot multitask. It's hilarious.
Like,
do you want me to have sex with you or do the dishes? Which one is it?
Yeah.
You know,
which one?
That's hilarious.
I get how sexy you are when you're doing this and how it, you know, what this does. I want to rip off those rubber gloves and just take you away. Sometimes they're so smart and sometimes they're so cute and silly and sweet, but they don't even know it. They don't even know they're being funny.
Very true.
Kenya, you already knew, Kenya, that Jennifer Irwin's book, Address the Color of the Sky, you know, she's had the Hollywood people after her. This is not just some little option thing like with other friends, you know, people we've known that they just give them a few bucks and then tie it up for years. This is the legit thing. First, you told me you've got a young woman director. I know before you told me you'd mentioned some different people, names that were being talked about for directors, but you mentioned Bradley Cooper in there somewhere.
The producer is very interested in Bradley Cooper playing the role of Nick. So we'll see. I'm going to be a consultant on the film, and I'm not going to be, deciding who's going to be acting in it.
Okay. Well, if you happen to, I think that's great that you're on, you know, and I would imagine, okay, this is me, I would just imagine that there are times when you're probably just doing a simple thing or maybe just late in bed at night reading or something like that, and then it just sort of hits you full on again.
I feel incredibly grateful. The producer has been so supportive and so positive about the book. I'm incredibly grateful.
Well, it's a magnificent story. I think this is going to be such a popular book. It's going to be a bestseller before you know it, because as I said, you're fit in a place where I have seen no one write anything like this, and I read two or three books a week. There is nothing like
thank you so much for saying that. I love it. I love hearing
it. If you need, and while you're a consultant on the set and so forth, if you need, say, I don't know, two women to be extras, just to be maybe crazy women on the couch.
Especially Bradley Cooper playing the lead.
Really?
About that. Yeah. So he just
I'll find a spot.
Meanwhile, by the way, making a movie is like watching grass grow. It's really not exciting at all.
Oh, I did extra work for and some commercials for many, many years. And yeah, and those are you sit 5 hours and wait for something, and then they call you. Okay, what was I doing? Oh yeah, I had a headache. Give me some aspirin, you know, or oh, I'm a Burger King. I'm buying a burger. Yeah, that's what I'm doing. So it's like I forgot what I was doing here. So yeah, I've made that scene. So. We're just letting you know that we're available and we're easy to work with. Well, you have
I will keep that in mind.
Yeah, then she'll put our picture up if you see these women.
Please lock the door.
Get them some backstage passes, please. No, I believe me. The best part is that my boyfriend is, you know, I said he's a lawyer, and so he puts in the film contract that I get to be on the red bit. You know, I get friends. He was putting everything in the contract, which is really cute.
Girl, you are so. Oh yes, you are. You are because a lot of people don't know that everything. Like I studied. Of course, at UCLA on publicity for film units. This is before the film is made, how you plan to look.
Great.
Yeah, Henri Bollinger, who was the man in that business, has been for years and years and years. He was the instructor or professor, and he, you know, taught us about how you time out these quote-unquote leaks about things happening behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Films being made, and you know, you plan it. It's part of your schedule, like everything else, like every press release. Oops, we got a leak, a story, a scandal, or something.
It's all on purpose. Everything happens on purpose.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the producer hasn't announced herself yet because that's, you know, she's not ready to do that, and it all has to be strategized on who bought the film rights. And I can't say who bought the film rights yet, but. You know, I'm excited when she does announce it and to let everyone know who the team is. And it's just really, it's great. And it is a dream come true for every author.
You see, yeah. So who bought that? I don't know. It was a guy by the elevator. I really don't know who he was. But, you know, it was just some guy. I know you can't tell everything and people don't understand. But I also know, too, that people aren't aware of, and I wasn't for a long time, that you do have to have everything negotiated into your contract, like you will be on the red carpet, you know, and where you will sit, and you will be here and there. Everything.
Yeah. I put in my name will be third on the credits, you know.
Wow.
And there's just so many nuances and details that have to be in there. And, you know, it's going to help the film if my book's a bestseller, New York Times bestseller, an Amazon bestseller by the time they start filming. So there's incentives in there for that, too, for me to, you know, the motivation of my book be a really huge success helps the film be a success.
Yes, definitely. I can see that. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
you know,
so,
we're speaking that into existence right now. We're speaking it into existence.
We're putting it out to the universe, yeah.
It's out there. It's out there.
I have a very talented agent. I'm incredibly lucky to be, you know, have her guidance. And she's Alec Baldwin's agent. She's very big time. And I'm absolutely honored to even, I mean, anytime I get an email from her, I have to be able to pull my car over and, you know, it's like I'm gonna black out. I mean, she's just so famous, you know. She's just so big time, and she's. I feel very blessed. I'm in such good hands, and I have a fantastic indie contract on the table. For a very, very good friend who owns a nice little publishing company. So I do have that as well, and I just have to decide what's going to be the best move for the book. So I'm gonna try and go with a big publisher, and if it doesn't work out, then I'm going to go with a small one.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well,
so I should know in the next few months, hopefully.
We're excited for you. We're excited about Address the Color of the Sky, your novel, and about the film and everything. And I'm so grateful that you've been so kind and generous with my technical difficulties before, and you've been so generous with your time tonight. And I really, really appreciate it. Yeah,
thank you so much.
Thank you so very much, Jennifer Irwin. Thank you, BFF Queen Diva Kenya Colbert, for joining us here tonight. And remember, folks, Kenya Colbert
Show.
Well,
thank you for having me, and hopefully we can get together again sometime.
It was so nice meeting you, Jennifer.
It was great meeting you, too. Hopefully I'll get to meet you guys in person sometime.
Yes,
okay,
ma'am.
So stay in touch, and we'll be watching you. You're already in L.A. You're in Hollywood. But Address the Color of the Sky, Jennifer Irwin. You see it on all my social media. And
woo!
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.